You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. We can also be heard on the World Wide Web, all over, Ellen.
Yes, all over the international World Wide Web, absolutely. On SitaMediaInc.com, you'll be able to see our website as well as all of the archive shows. And also on 1510 WWBC, they keep an archive of the shows as well. Facebook page always has our stuff updated as well. So thank you so much for listening for 10 years, y'all.
It's been great. It's been, and you've been right up there for the 10 years with us helping out. So my co-host is always Ellen Little, and we've added on a second co-host. We've added on Samantha Nazario, who's going to be, I call her my guest co-host. Because there's actually nobody like Ellen Little that's been helping on the show. She's like the senior co-host, right? Samantha came into my life at a time when I needed to have somebody else added on to the show. Like myself, she ran for office. And she enjoys being a part of CETA and Friends.
I absolutely do. And it's an honor to sit here with you ladies. You've been doing this for 10 years. So I guess that would make me the rookie.
Yeah.
And I feel very blessed to be under such amazing internship with you ladies, because I get to learn from two of the best.
Thank you.
And thanks to Paul.
Yes. So we heat up the airwaves every Monday. We speak about things that are going on around the nation, right here in Florida, all over the world. And we speak about kitchen table topics. We speak about financial literacy. We speak about the environment. We speak about owning a home, selling a home. We speak about healthcare, how to leave a good footprint behind for the next generation. And our listeners who tune in religiously to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and send me emails and text and God knows a lot of Facebook messages as well, they do understand that we here, Ellen, Samantha, and I, understand that freedom of speech comes with a responsibility, that our words and actions do matter. And we try to be as pleasant as we can and kind of in the middle. Yeah,
Absolutely. We're not
common crazy ground. Left and crazy right politically at all. We try to find common ground, like you say, but for the most part, the word compromise should never be a bad word.
No. And what we've always said too, Sita, is that we don't care what side of the fence that you're on. We want you to stand up for something. Stand up for something that means something to your family. Stand up for something that means something in your community. And something that you can really get behind and do something about. Because Lord knows, we need as many boots in the streets as we possibly can right now, right?
Right.
Well
it's like I say, you know, we all have to be the change that we wish to see.
Absolutely.
And for our listeners who are tuned in this morning to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, many of the people I know take their passion and turn it into profit, like Ellen taught me. And a lot of our people take their activism and they turn that into their passion to make a difference on our world, right? And so today on our show, I have this wonderful lady. Her daughter, Heather Hare, passed away tragically after being murdered in Charlottesville in 2017. And I followed that story with her mom, Susan Burr. I followed that story when it happened. And I was so delighted to see that Heather Hare's mother created a foundation to honor her. Heather was a young civil rights activist, and she dedicated her life to promoting equal rights for all people. And her mom has established this foundation, and is also a scholarship program to provide financial assistance to individuals who are passionate, just like myself, about social change. So Ellen and Sam, we have Susan Bro on the phone, and she's calling in from Virginia. So welcome to our show this morning to Viewpoint with Sita and friend Susan Bro. And if you could reintroduce yourself to our listening audience, we would appreciate it.
Well, I think you did an excellent job, and good morning. I don't know what else I could say.
Well, you know, tell us a little bit about your daughter. And I know that, you know, one never gets over the loss of a child. But you have taken her memory, and you've created something beautiful out of it. So tell our listening audience a little bit about Heather Hare.
The Heather Hare Foundation was formed with donations that poured in from the community after her murder. And the donations were coming in to the family left and right. And I said, I don't think that people really intend all this money to be for the family. So let's do something with it. I asked her former supervisor, Alfred Wilson, to help me set up some sort of legal entity to handle the money, to make accountability for the money. Heather was passionate about social justice, but she was not particularly a known activist in the community. She worked two, sometimes three jobs. She worked as a paralegal by day. She worked as a bartender or a waitress in the afternoons, or the evenings rather, and then she sometimes delivered food for something similar to Grubhub. It was a different chain, but so a lot of her activism was done online, and really all she had done that particular day was decided that she needed to walk with her friends and stand with her friends from work in solidarity, and she was murdered in the process. Now, Heather was an ordinary 32-year-old single woman. She could be wild and woolly at times. She could be fiercely passionate and have a fierce temper at the same time, and have deep love for people. But too many people want to place her on a pedestal, and I think the point of Heather is that people can be an ordinary person and take a stand and make a difference, and you don't know what that difference is going to be. I tell people you just need to take a stand
right.
when the time comes.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter if you reach 100 people, or you reach 50 people, or you reach one person. But if you could change your mind of one person and say to them, listen, you know, we all learn through life experience, we learn through history, we learn from each other, we learn from communicating. And time is money, and it's precious. But it's up to us to take the time to talk to each other, because I think, you know, when that happened in Charlottesville and we saw the riots, we all said words matter, our actions matter. And a lot of people didn't believe that at that time. But Susan, how do we get past the hate that your daughter was confronted by in Charlottesville that day?
I think we just have to keep talking to one another. We have to recognize each other as fallible, but that we also have a lot more in common than we would like to admit at times. It's just very hard to get past that sometimes. I'm going to decline a call trying to come in because I don't know who it was from. Are you still there?
Yeah, we're here. We're here.
Okay, good.
And we're delighted that you're taking this your morning with us. But, you know, you touched on something earlier when you said that your daughter had three jobs, right? And I met my friend Ellen Little at an organization called the American Business Women's Association, and we started talking. We communicated. We both had something that we could talk about, and Heather had that gift where she worked as a bartender. So I could just imagine how many people Heather connected with through her job as a paralegal, through delivering her food or whatever she delivered with the service, as well as talking to people. That was a form of activism, believe it or not, what she was doing just in her everyday life working.
Yeah, I never thought of it that way, but I can see that. I don't know what she would say or do as a bartender. I mean, I used to go hang out with her in the bar once in a while.
Yeah.
Before I met my husband, but yeah.
Ellen, don't you think that talking to people and communicating, It doesn't matter where we are, where we work. That's what it takes, is for all of us to just open our mouths and start speaking with our voices and get to know each other.
Well, and you never know what impression you're going to leave with somebody. And that's the legacy that we hope for, right?
Right.
Our entire lives, is that somebody says, you know, I remember the moment that I met you, and this is what happened, or that you changed
my
life because
right.
of that moment. And, you know, you never know when that's going to happen. And the most insignificant thing to you might be the most significant thing to the person that you're communicating to. So never pass up those opportunities.
Right.
And God bless your daughter, too, as well.
Yes.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. So we have a question for you that one of our friends sent in.
Hi. It's, what are some of the systematic changes you think we need in our country?
For one thing, we've got to start telling the truth about our past. You know, I'm almost 65, and I was watching a show on PBS last night and learned for the very first time, and maybe it was around me before because I was not a student of history, but I learned for the very first time the real ramifications behind the Emancipation Proclamation mm-hmm. and Lincoln's original stance on slavery, which I had heard before. So it would be helpful if we could start with truth-telling in our history and get over the whole lost cause thing. And let's do some changes in how schools are funded. The fact that schools are funded by property taxes in the area, and so that automatically keeps people who are in redlined communities having schools that have less resources. Those simple enough changes are going to not be popular, I can tell you. And yet I think they would have a tremendous impact on our society, on our democracy, on our entire way of life.
Yeah, so what you're saying is invest in all communities. Invest in all people.
Yes.
Because, you know, people,
yes.
will, and I think you hit the nail on the head, because, you know, we oftentimes we hear people speak about communities and their school and why they don't want their kids to go to that school. And I always say, well, ask yourself, why is it you don't want your child to attend a community school? And, well, it's because the sidewalks are uneven. It's because the road is no good. It's because the neighborhood is unsafe. The type of children that come to the school are from single families. And so we'll start thinking, what causes that? And it's poverty, and it's a lack of resources in those communities to uplift the communities. So I think you hit the nail right on the head. We need to invest in education, and we also need to start having compassion for other people. When people talk about slavery and it's hurting them, listen to what they're saying. Because maybe you didn't know that they had a descendant in their family that suffered. Or maybe you don't know of the stories that have been handed down. But if you show some compassion and you say, you know what, I understand. And I'm sorry for what happened to your family. And I'm sorry for how you feel. Simple, you know, like you say, just listen, right?
And then the practice of redlining for house lending, which has implications on into current economy, current education decisions, policing, redlining itself, the practice that is supposedly no longer in existence, in practice, from what I understand, still exists. And I know that the current administration is trying to work on some of these policies, even as we speak. But as with all politicians and political systems, we have to pay attention. We have to be informed. We have to know what's happening in our government so that we can express our wishes to our elected officials.
And keep
so
and hold them accountable.
And redlining
right,
happens with certain professions too, like real estate, for instance. That's one of the things in real estate that they talk about all the time, is that that's a violation of an ethics policy. You're not allowed to do that. You can actually lose your license for redlining specifically. Mm-hmm. But banks are still kind of doing it with credit checks, and you know, when you're buying in a certain zip code, like you always talk about, Sita, when you're buying in a certain
zip code, you are your zip code.
So there are banks, and there are still people that are doing it, and they don't call it redlining, obviously, because it's against the law.
It's like
to
a
do
hidden
that.
Bias,
but it is it's totally a
hidden
stereotype.
Bias.
It's what we don't want police to do, what we don't want banks to do, what we don't want people that are affecting our day to day. We don't want them to have that stereotype in brain. But it's hard.
But think about it. I mean, where does the stereotype start? It starts in your home.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay. My daughter just gave birth to a beautiful little baby, right? And in the hospital, yeah, he's about 29 days old. But here's the thing. In the hospital, all these little babies are beautiful and they're innocent. Someone corrupts their mind in their own kitchen table or in their schools or in their places of worship or in a playground. Somebody tells these children who to hate and who not to hate based on the color of their skin or their religion or their social status.
Or the songs they're listening to and the lyrics that they're listening to and the movies and the games.
So how do we change it? I think the adults need to stand up and look in the mirror and say, listen, I did that and it needs to stop. Susan, would you agree that all these things start? I mean, everyone talks about the foundation for learning is in your home. But don't you agree that the reason why your daughter was a compassionate human being and why she stood up for others and advocated on those that early morning of that day in 2017 is because she had parents that were willing to teach her right from wrong and how to care about other people.
How to stand by her friends no matter what.
Right. And go with her friends and join hands and say, let's fight this together. So wouldn't you agree that everything starts in the home?
Well, yes, but also from experience. Heather grew up living in a trailer park, so she knew what it was like to be on the receiving end of snide remarks like trailer park trash. She herself was disabled, so she understood that sometimes disability can make life difficult. I mean, Heather had an understanding from her own experience as well as whatever we taught her in the home.
Yeah, so she lived it. She understood. She knew what it was like to feel underappreciated, to be teased, to be taunted, to be told that you're not good enough, that you don't live in a good enough place. She felt it. So, I mean, and we could see her with us right here. I could feel it like she is with us listening too, you know.
Susan.
Yes.
Susan, can you talk to us a little bit about the Jabara Hire No Hate?
Yes. So it was discovered by the Arab Americans Institute when they were working on a project that Khalid Jabara's murder, and which was exactly 1 year before Heather's murder. Wow. It was on August 12, 2016 in Tulsa, Oklahoma, was tried as a hate crime, but it was not listed in the hate crime statistics for that year. So they thought, well, is this just an odd fluke that one has been left out, or are there other highly publicized hate crimes that have not been entered into the FBI statistics? So they discovered that Heather's murder in 2017 was not reported as a hate crime for that year.
Oh,
so
wow.
They worked with other groups, and we're currently working with the lawyers. Let me make sure I get this right. The Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under the Law, who helped craft the legislation to get accuracy in hate crime reporting and to streamline the process, to incentivize the process, to help train police departments on how to do it. Just a lot of ways to try to get accurate numbers, because one Department of Justice statistic was significantly less by like several hundred thousand than another Department of Justice statistic. So it's very difficult to see how to fix hate crimes when you're not even sure how many you've had. I don't go to the doctor and give them one set of symptoms and then have them make two very broadly different diagnoses. I try to give them as accurate a set of symptoms. They take my temperature, they take my blood pressure, they check blood sugar because I'm diabetic, and from that, you know, they try to make an accurate diagnosis. And yet we have expected for years for our State Department, our Department of Justice and the FBI to act on hate crimes when they have wildly inaccurate information. Let me clarify, too, that Charlottesville did go back later and add in the attack, the car attack, as a hate crime later in statistics.
Yeah, because it is a deadly weapon. It is a deadly,
right?
I mean, right.
And some of that may have been due to the fact that the case had not, been concluded at the time they were filing statistics. I don't really know what the whys and wherefores were, and it doesn't matter. It's in the books now. But that's what the Heather Heyer, the Khalid Jabara Heather Heyer No Hate Act is about. And so it had bipartisan support. It had support in both the House and the Senate in the previous administration. But there were other priorities, of course, with the pandemic. And then politicians like to roll things together, so they tried to roll a whole bunch of civil rights acts in with the COVID relief package, and that was denied. And honestly, those are such separate issues. I don't think that it was necessarily bad that that was denied at that time. But we're hopeful that with new administration and new priorities as the pandemic eases, that we can get back to this piece of legislation.
Yeah. Well, I hate sometimes when they bundle things like that together, because then you can't get the legislation passed.
But and then it's confusing, too, for anybody who's trying to get it
right,
passed,
because they put too many things.
Yeah.
So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Susan Brough. She's a nationally acclaimed speaker and coach, and she's a president and board chair of the Heather Heyer Foundation, formed in the honor of her daughter, who was killed in August 2017. Now, Heather was a 32-year-old paralegal, and she died after a car drove into a crowd of counter-protesters demonstrating against a white nationalist rally that was being held in Virginia on August 12th. Now, my understanding is 19 other protesters were injured after being hit by the vehicle. And I remember on TV watching you back then, Susan, and I said, oh my God, I feel her pain, because I remember you saying back then, they tried to shut my child up. And when you said my child, it just hit every mother in America right in the heart, because your child became our child as well. And, you know, talk to us a little bit about that day when that happened.
The day of the funeral or the day that she was killed?
The day when you said to all of us on TV, you said they tried to shut my child up. I don't know if that was her funeral or that was the day that you found out she was hit by the car.
No, that was the funeral.
Yeah.
So on the day she was killed, of course, I came home kind of in shock, and family and friends sort of rallied around, and it was sort of surreal.
I'm sorry.
And it's okay. And I cried all night long. But at 7 o'clock the next morning, there was a knock on the door, and I thought, okay, here it comes, because I'd seen enough of it on the news to realize this was going to draw national and perhaps international attention. So I thought, okay, what am I going to say? I thought the main concern for me was to tell the truth, because they were trying to say she was a violent Antifa protester, and that she had participated in violence that day. And I knew my child well enough to know, and I had talked to her friends who were with her enough to know that she was with the group who had just been walking as far away from the violence as they could on the opposite side of the downtown mall. So my thought was, let me just tell the truth. The funeral, there was a great deal of press interest. There was a great deal of politician interest. And I said, no, I will allow cameras there unobtrusively. I will allow politicians to attend, but I will not allow them to speak. I picked the people who would speak from the family and friends, and I said, here's what I'd like you to talk about for about 3 to 5 minutes. I picked two ministers from the community, because we don't really go to church, but I picked two, a white minister and a black minister, that I thought would have appropriate messages. And I did not write down what I was going to say. On the way there, I was trying to think about it, and I turned off my phone after one Senator Mark Warner had called me, and I said to my husband, I got to think about what I'm going to say, because I felt like I had one opportunity. That would be my only time my last time to talk to the public, and I had a call to action I wanted to issue. I thought, if my child's going to die, I'm going to at least make it count for something. And that was what was on my mind at the time of the funeral.
Yeah, and we felt it. I remember watching it, and I knew then that you were going to spring into action. And then I read where after that you went on to Ellen, the Ellen Show, and they gave you a donation, and you used that, and you've been given scholarships to the AIDS Healthcare Foundation and other places. And you know what? You have taken her memory, and you've made it in such a beautiful thing, and you inspire so many of us. And I know Ellen is busy trying to put everything on our website, you know, everything about Heather Heyer Foundation. But before we leave, we have 2 minutes, and I wanted to ask you really quick, what do you think people can be doing now to make a difference?
Well, for one thing, start talking to people. And I realize nerves are raw right now. I'm part of a film that was a documentary that's coming out in a couple of weeks that was actually started filming in 2018, and I had no idea where it was going to go. They just followed me with cameras. That's called The Reunited States. And frankly, it's been panned on the far left and the far right both. Executive producers are Van Jones and Meghan McCain. And it seems so simple a concept, but just talking to people, getting your head out of the sand, read on your own. Don't ask people, why do all white people or why do all black people, blah, 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 whatever.
Get to know the people, like I do. I make my curry chicken and I invite people over, and I get to know them and talk about their cultures, their lives, their children, and I get to know them. And it works good for me. I think everyone should do that. You don't have to cook the curry, but my goodness, you could make a barbecue. And you could invite
there
somebody
is something
over.
Magic in that curry, though, yeah. I got to say.
So give us
Well, in the pandemic, that might be a little more dangerous, but you can still acknowledge people. You can connect online. I mean, there are so many opportunities to educate yourself and to learn about other people and realize that we are way more alike than we are different.
And you were also a school teacher, right, Susan?
I was for many years. I had quit 7 years before Heather, or 6 years before Heather was killed, because I had, it was 2009, because I had cancer, and the cancer surgery went really well as far as removing the cancer, but then I didn't heal from the surgery for 6 months, and I said, you know what, it's time to change careers. So I was a secretary bookkeeper in a cooperative extension office for the last 6 years before she was murdered.
Well, Susan Breaux, you've become one of my friends now, and I hope we remain friends, and I'd love to have you back on the show. I just love taking my voice, and what my mother taught me is, you know, if you see something, say something. If you can do something, do it. And I'd like to get your website, and so our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends can get that. So give us the website, and then Ellen will take it from there.
Okay, it's www.heatherheyerfoundation.com. Heatherheyerfoundation.com. And in fact, I need to go on there and add some things. We've got some great news. Southern Poverty Law Center gave us $50,000 back in October. And because of the election, I didn't want to, you know, put out any announcements. We just got honorable mention on the Civi Awards, and we've taken on a new board member as well, as because one has retired from the board.
So wow, you do have some updating to do.
Pardon me?
I said you do have some updating to do. That's all fantastic news.
Yeah, I'm going there.
Fantastic. Well, thank you again so much for joining us. Thank you so much again for joining us this morning. And Sita, we're going to take a couple minutes and listen to our sponsors, and we'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right after these messages.
Portions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud 9, that's Cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9. Mattress and furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast Urgent Care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is the genius with technology, Sita Biggie. We're back on Viewpoint with Sita and friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We're on AM 1510, FM 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7. And we're heard all over the world, Miss Ellen. And every time I say we're heard all over the world, guess who I think of? Our good friend in Ireland, Nick.
Yeah.
Ryan Purcell would like to call back on the show.
Excellent.
But the last time he called in, we used the WhatsApp and we used the video and we ringed it up. So I told him I'd like to have him call back in and speak about autism.
Well, we've
and all
done
that.
Zoom. We've done a couple of different things.
Well,
so
I was going to ask Paul, can we accept collect calls if I wanted to pay for his call? Yeah, we have to find out. Yeah, so we'll have to do that. But our second segment is with a person that I met actually online. That I met all these nice people on Facebook, and I met this woman, Wendy Sellers. She's called the HR lady, and I was really impressed by what she does. She helps companies to keep their hiring practices transparent and hold them accountable, and she helps to recruit. She downsizes, helps them to downsize, change management, strategy, corporate cultures, coaching, supervising. She actually does managerial training and leaderships. And I know we had used a company like that when we had our practice. And so I was interested in how this one woman is a one-woman team and how she's doing this. So I asked her to call in, and of course we booked it, and she's calling in today. So we'll be with her in a minute. But before we go to Ms. Wendy Sellers, who is known as the HR lady, who's authentic and transparent, and we'll be talking in a minute, Ellen, I just wanted to tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, someone asked me to use my voice to encourage other people to get the COVID-19 vaccine. And I just want to say that I did get both of my shots. I got one on December 28th, and then I got the other one on the 18th of January. And I'm doing fine. I had no side effects. Everything is good. And I had to because I work with the elderly. I've been working in nursing homes for the last 32 or 33 years of my life. And I don't want to be that nurse that is going to bring the infection to the nursing home. So I wear my, although I've been inoculated, I wear my mask in the gym. I wear my mask when I'm not in my social bubble. I'm very careful, and I am a woman of color. And so people say, well, the communities of color, they're mistrusting and they don't want to take the vaccine. But here's the thing. We are in this war on COVID together. We've got to get our country back to normal again. We've got to reset our economy and get our health care back on track, right? So how do we get our little children back in school? How do we get people back to work? How do we get people to contribute again? And I know, Sam, you're a woman of color, and we've talked about this before.
Yes, we have.
And you said that a lot of people are not trusting the scientists and using their common sense. And why do you think so?
Well, America doesn't have the best history at being transparent with people that are of color or, you know, a poverty level. So there is that systematic fear. And I think that a lot of stuff is still unanswered. Like myself, I advocate for the bleeding disorder community. Where's the information to protect the fact that this is a good idea for our children, for our community, for people with cancer or people who have extreme allergies? So that kind of information makes myself a little hesitant. Like I've said before, you've got it. It works for you. If you're healthy enough, if you're elderly, yeah, those are different factors to take in. But for myself, my reasoning is I need to see more information.
What about you, Ellen? You said you're allergic.
Yeah, I'm allergic to a lot of things, and it's just not, I've never gotten a vaccination. The last vaccination I had was the one that I got when I was a child, and that one put me in the hospital. So I've never been a vaccine person myself, although my entire family's in the medical profession, and they've all gotten it. So they've all gotten the vaccine.
Well,
so I'm not a proponent against it, but much like you, Sam, it's not for me for right now.
This is an American tragedy. We've lost over 400,000 Americans, and we're all in this together. And I'll tell you, ladies, anything you want to learn about the COVID-19 vaccine, the efficacy rate, where to find it, all that, it's all online. I do agree with the way they're doing it now. From the beginning, we should have made this a priority. We got to inoculate the people over 65, and then we go to the other groups. But anyways, I just want to say that being a nurse, I am pro-vaccine. I'm pro-science, common sense. And of course, you have to have faith. And I do believe in this current administration is going to do their best for everybody. So now, Wendy Sellers, are you on the phone with us right now?
I am. How are you?
Thank you. I'm wonderful. Thank you for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We just had to, you know, do a little bit of Sita-isms, we call it, because people do ask us to use our voice in a positive manner because we are in such a terrible place right now. Mentally, my husband is a retired ER physician. We were talking about the effects of mental health on the elderly who are not seeing their loved ones in the nursing homes and of the children who are missing their friends and their socialization at school. And also, you know, a lot of kids went to school and they were being identified by their teachers and social workers if they were being abused, if they had a bruise, if they didn't have food to eat, they were eating at school. And so this pandemic, it's affecting people in a wide variety of ways. And I think it's only fair that we all start putting our nation first and doing what it takes to keep people safe. So how are you doing through this pandemic, and has it affected the HR lady?
Well, I could tell you in the beginning of it, and then even in the summer, you know, I was just helping people that I don't even know. Half the time I wasn't even charging because there were so many small businesses that just didn't know what to do and didn't have HR. And so really how to get a handle on the, you know, all the acts that were out there and the Families First Coronavirus Response Act and everything. So I was happy that I was able to, you know, help the people who needed it and so that they could help their employees and keep people home that were sick so that people weren't coming to work because they're desperate for money and therefore not getting tested and spreading the disease and then companies shutting down. So it's been a whirlwind. It's definitely been a whirlwind. And again, I'm happy that I was able to help people and then continue to help people.
So tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and why do clients call the HR lady? I like your name, by the way. It's catchy and it kind of like tells
it's
us
empowering.
Everything, right? It tells us everything in three, four words, right? So why do clients call you?
So, well, first of all, the HR lady has a trademark, two trademarks, so don't get any ideas.
No, I think I'm good.
So yeah, my clients call me, probably half of my clients are small businesses that they don't have HR or somebody is acting as HR, but they are just really doing like the paperwork. So they'll call me and I try to help them set up super simple processes and forms and handbooks. And, you know, a lot of big companies, no offense to anyone that's listening, but they tend to overcomplicate things, right? And so I try to make it as simple as possible for organizations that don't have HR. And then the other half of my clients, they might have HR, but they need management training and they just don't have time to do it themselves. So I go into companies that are of any size, big or small, and train the managers how to handle people issues.
You're like a superwoman, one-man team. I love it. So do you provide virtual services in person or both?
I do both. I actually, right before the pandemic, I switched most of my services to virtual and dropped my prices a great deal because I want to start traveling outside of Florida. And so I was kind of stuck here if I had to keep being on site. So I do go on site when necessary. You know, most people are not allowing people on site right now because of the pandemic. So it's kind of worked out. And I can work from my sweatpants at home while helping you.
Yeah. You only have to dress from the waist up?
Yeah. My daughter, my daughter's an attorney, and boy, she used to live in her yoga pants. So I'm sure it's challenging, right? Right now, with the businesses you serve. Tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends some of the challenges you face, not just during the pandemic, but being the HR lady in general.
Sure. Oops, sorry, I accidentally hit mute. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the challenges all around, honestly, is finding good employees. And so you would think with the pandemic, half the industry is laid off and the other half, like manufacturing, for example, or healthcare, are continuing to hire. But the issue is the people that have lost their jobs, say from retail, restaurant, theme parks, their skills don't automatically transfer to the other jobs. And so I'm working with my clients in manufacturing and then my clients in healthcare. I'm working with them to put in training programs so that we can use these amazing customer service people in the other industries and switch them over to the industries that actually have jobs. But it's not easy because in order to do training, you need time or money. And not a lot of companies have that. So I'm trying my best to do everything via video and do management training. I'm doing video training as well now. And so it's been quite a challenge, but I have to hand it to the people that are out there and they're keeping their employees and their customers safe. And the ones that aren't, well, you're being called out and now you're being fined as well.
Right. Well, you know what? A lot of companies were also offering perks. You know, for people to stay actually through the pandemic. I know we were getting, as nurses, we were getting A lot of people were sending us food, which was good back then. In the early, when we were working the COVID unit, we had like we would get food, we'd get breakfast and lunch, and it was a perk. You know, you didn't have to worry about that when you're there with all this PPE gear and whatever. But why do you think companies are having such a difficult time hiring? I mean, when there are jobs. I mean, I hear people say, "Well, there aren't no jobs." And then you hear other people who say, well, you know, some folks got $600 plus the $275, which was $875 a week in Florida for quite a few months. And so they were making more money than they were earning at their jobs. So then you open up a whole can of worms. Now the employers have to say, well, were we paying enough to begin with? Can we get the people to come back? Will they stay? Because I know my son-in-law has a business, and that was such a discussion, a robust discussion we were having on our kitchen table about the people who were getting the stimulus money versus the ones who were working. Did you hear any discussions about that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a well-known fact that Florida, in general, underpays individuals. And we have a million excuses for it, right? We have no state taxes. We have jobs. We have sunshine. We have this. We have that. But in the end, people come here to Florida and they can't afford to pay their rent because we pay them so low and it's customary. And so that's all going to change because the hourly rates, you know, the $15 minimum wage law has passed. So employers have a couple of years to get to the $15, but it's going to be 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. And so, you know, they're not going to have an excuse to pay $10 an hour, $11 an hour, because it's going to be illegal. You know, I hear a lot of people out saying, oh, that's going to put employers out of business. Well, if you're an employer and you're counting on your employee being in poverty, then you should be out of business, because that's just a very, very bad management practice. It's a very bad humanity practice.
Yeah, but you know, I sometimes want to say to people, well, if you can't afford to pay someone a decent wage, maybe you shouldn't have a business. Maybe you should be working like all of us for a company and putting up with whatever, you know, you have to do to keep your job description, which is you have to have in services, you have to show up on time, you can't take time off when you want. I mean, you really have to look at it, because why? Because when you have a company, a small business or large business or whatever, and you hire somebody for $8, $9, $10, $11 an hour, the taxpayers are picking up the tab for their Medicaid and all that anyways.
If you even qualify.
Exactly.
Right? They do qualify, because nobody could live with full-time, pay rent, pay car payment, insurance, put gas in the car, put food on the table with less than $10 an hour, $11. You just can't. It's even if you're one person, two person, or three persons. Do you agree?
I 100% agree. And this law that passed it in September of this year, September 30th, so really October, the minimum wage goes to $10 an hour. And still, that's such a shame. $10 an hour. People can't get by on that. And that's why, you know, we have so much poverty and people that have to go to the state and the federal government to ask for help with everything else, with food assistance, daycare, health care, because their minimum wage doesn't support that. So, yeah, I definitely, there was a lot of talk in the beginning of the pandemic, specifically in Florida, about the $600. That was short term. It came and went. Now it's $300 extra as of right now. It may change shortly again to $400, but it's $300 extra. So still you're only getting $575 a week, because the maximum you get on regular unemployment is $275. I mean, if you're a single person and maybe you have five roommates, you might be okay with $575 a week. But most people have families, and that's a low cost. So I think this pandemic is going to help change things for the better, for people, for employees, for the common person. And business owners may not like it, but they're not going to have a choice.
Well, yeah. Well, if your employees are healthy and happy and able to put food on their table and have a roof over their head, then they'll come to work in a better frame of mind. But you can't expect people to smile and give you their best when they're worrying while they're at work. Well, how am I going to go home and pay my rent? Or how am I going to go home and take care of my children? And my kids can't do their homework because I don't have a computer. And I don't have a computer because I don't have any extra money because I had to buy gas, you know, put tires on my car. I mean, I always say it doesn't make sense for the boss's wife to pull up in a Mercedes-Benz mm-hmm. when the employees have a Toyota with two tires that need repair. Something is wrong with that. I'm not saying that if you have money.
Humanity.
Yeah, I'm not saying give away your money. I say make as much money as you want, pay your fair share, but treat your employees in a dignified manner. You should not say to your employees, I'm going to the Yacht Club for lunch with my buddies, when your employee has a brown bag with two slices of bread and nothing in between.
Mm-hmm. Been
right?
there, done that.
It just doesn't make any sense.
Absolutely. And, you know, on the same note, too, what I encourage small business owners or any size business, what I encourage you really to do, because this is how I get some of my, I don't even want to say my clients, because I won't intentionally work with people who treat their employees poorly. But if I'm trying to help somebody out and they're actually saying, I need help, I'll make the changes. What I tell them is look at all the costs that, you know, all the expenses that are costing the business money because you're paying your employees low amounts of hourly wage. So one cost is turnover. Every time somebody leaves, you got to train, you got to find a new person. And it's not cheap to find a new person. It used to be, but it's not anymore. All these websites that you can put job ads up, they all want money now, and they want a lot of it. And then you have to interview people, that takes time. And you have to train people, that takes time. You got to pay taxes, that takes time. All of this stuff. So doing a true cost analysis of how much does it cost me for turnover? Why can't I just dump that money into pay, right? Into salary or hourly pay?
Well, it's common
pay.
Sense. It's using good old common sense.
So it's up to $1 million. The latest thing, because I do work at FIT in the business section. At FIT, they came up with a $6,000 number for any business that does $750 a year or under. So that's what the cost of turnover is. As that number goes up for sales, as far as sales go, as that number goes up, the number increases like exponentially.
Right.
Like when I worked for Home Depot, it was a $22,000 ticket for every time somebody had to turn over. And then it was more money if you had a manager that was turning over,
right.
Like a store manager, assistant
manager. Yeah, so if you're taking $6,000 and you divide it by 2080, which is about how many hours the average employee works a year if they're working 40 hours a week, that's $2.88. So give your employees, heck, just a $2 raise. Don't even go the 88 cents. And you're still going to be saving money versus the turnover.
Exactly,
so
right. Such a smart thing. What a great message.
It's, you know, I laugh when you say common sense, because I have a book and I talk about common sense, and common sense isn't common. Common sense is a set of skills learned by a common set of people. And so everybody that's on this call right now or listening to this, you have now been educated.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you
have the common sense.
Well, you know, we have about 4 minutes left, and I just want to say, you know, I remember when I was a little girl, every time somebody, not, you know, like people in our village would lose a job, and they would come looking for my dad. And then my dad, who was sort of a spokesperson for the village, he would go with this person to their boss. I remember my dad speaking to so many people that owned, you know, small businesses and little companies back in Trinidad. And he would say, think about it. You're going to have to get a new man to do this job. And this man right here has given you, you know, X amount of years. But yeah, he fell short in XYZ. Please give him a chance. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, if you give a person a chance, and then the person tells you, well, you know, boss, I quit because I want a little more money or whatever, it works out. You just have to talk to the employees one-on-one and find out what's going on in their life. Because you'll find out that maybe that $20 more a week doesn't mean a lot to the boss. But to that employee, that's $80 a month or $100 a month makes a huge difference in his life.
But
you
in
know?
The state of Florida, it has to be made legislation, because this right to work state thing is giving a lot of companies, and she'll probably agree with me, the fear of people. Like, you could walk in, your boss is on the wrong side of the table today, you're fired, get out. And they have no recourse to keeping their job. So that's hard. The sales.
Yeah, but that's actually, it's actually employment at will, not right to work. Right to work is a right to work without a union. but everybody screws those two up. But it's employment at will. And every state actually has employment will except for one state. And so anybody can leave a job for any reason, and anybody can get fired for any reason, as long as it's not an illegal reason. So that, you know, the employment at will, it's just an excuse, you know.
Yeah.
Yes, you can walk in and get fired at any reason. But guess what? You could also walk in and quit for any reason.
Right.
So it's the same on both sides. But I wrote two books, and one of them's called Suck It Up, Buttercup. And it's really about, you know, being a leader people will follow. So, you know, people that say suck it up, buttercup are usually being sarcastic. When they read this book, they're going to grab a mirror and go, oh, crap, I'm the problem.
Well, you know, isn't it like having a job is like a relationship, right? You're giving that place 8 to 10 hours of your time, and you should give them 100%. If they're going to take a chance on you and give you your benefits, and they're paying you to do it, do the best you can. And if you have a grief, there is HR. You talk to the HR person, and if it's not a good fit for you, then you quit. But the thing is, I do think that if you start talking to people one-on-one and communicating how you feel in the workplace, I feel like it does help. I've done it all my life, and it's always had good results for me. So, Wendy, give us your website, and how can someone get a hold of you if there's an employer out there that needs an HR lady?
Sure. My website's thehrlady.com. Very easy. And you can just go to the website and contact me, text. My phone number is all over the website. I don't have any staff. It's just me. And thanks to COVID, I have zero life. So you could call me at any time, email me at any time. And unless I'm sleeping, I'll probably answer. But I love helping people. I have a lot of advice that I give on my website for free, and then on social media. Probably LinkedIn is the best place, but I just love helping people. And then, of course, I have two super cheap books that can help.
Where can we find your books really quick? We have 1 minute left. Where can we find your books?
Sure. You can find my books on Amazon. You can just Google my name or search my name on Amazon, Wendy Sellers, or you can go to my website, thehrlady.com, and the books are on the author tab.
Hey, what's your secret? You're like a one lady walking dynamo there. What's your secret? I mean, I wake up every day and I say, life is beautiful. Just keep going. What's yours?
You know, I make lots of lists, and then I'm very goal oriented. So I want to accomplish them. But every once in a while, I look at a list and go, I don't even know what this is. And I'm going to take it off here and see if anybody notices.
Awesome. Well, Wendy Sellers, thank you so much for being on with us today. Another great edition of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Thank you so much for joining us every Monday, 1 o'clock live, right here on 1510 WWBC.
The preceding program may not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of WWBC. You're listening to WWBC, COCO, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, COCO, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.